Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the world. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Michelle Wynne Jones. Now, you know that famous midlife crisis cliché? Well, in Michelle's case, it was her husband's crisis with the office floozy that created a domino effect and resulted in one of her own. In just 4 short months, she lost her home, her health, her job, and almost her 2 daughters. 4 days after leaving her husband with 6 carrier bags and a child by each hand, she found she couldn't walk as she was in terms of metaphysics, left literally without a leg to stand on and no means of support. One day she was deputy head of a thriving primary school, and the next she was having radical knee surgery and being made redundant from a job on the grounds of ill health. So, what did she do? She went to prison, a men's remand, where she spent the next 9 years teaching inmates to read and researching suicide. Michelle is probably the only dyscalculate numerologist in Europe. She successfully avoided anything to do with numbers until she was in her early 40s, and today she works internationally, full-time and in colour, helping clients from every walk of life discover their life contract, why they are here at this particular time in history. Michelle, I've been so looking forward to interviewing you. After reading this, I thought, oh my Lord, we're going to have so much to talk about. In fact, we have so much to talk about, I almost forgot to press the record button because we were nattering away and I realised we hadn't actually recorded anything that we were talking about.
We can start again.
It was just, it is fascinating. So, where to start? When did this happen? When did your husband have this midlife crisis? Your ex-husband?
My ex-husband.
Have this midlife crisis?
Basically, on his 42nd birthday.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, literally around that time, which I now know is absolutely pivotal, interesting time, midlife crisis time.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
42?
For men. Men, it tends to be between 38 and 46.
Oh, interesting.
Women, it tends to be younger.
Oh, really?
And no one ever talks about the quarter life crisis that people have in their mid-20s.
Wow.
There's a quarter-life crisis that happens then, when they either find they're in the wrong job, or they get married, or they have a child, or they move, or they buy a house. Something happens then, usually between 24 and 30. Again, younger for women, slightly older for men. Men take a little while to catch up. The maturity levels for men, they take a little bit longer to catch up.
See, I always thought it was like in their 50s, midlife crisis
thing.
It's not. Younger.
Yeah, it's younger.
How interesting.
Yeah, it is in their 40s. That is when the men rush off and buy themselves a red sports car and go off with the office floozy. Dangerous time, that time.
It is, isn't it?
And women decide, is that all there is? And that's when they look at the tennis instructor. If they weren't already looking at the tennis instructor,
they look at it in a very different way to how they were looking at him before.
Yes, quite right.
Start going to the gym slightly more often.
Yes, is that all there is?
How interesting.
That's what happens.
Wow.
And then you have your last crisis, which is in your late 50s, early 60s, which is your final act. So
okay.
To speak. And that's when you become a mature person.
Is it a crisis or is it just life?
No, I hate the word.
Yeah.
It's life. I hate the word crisis. I was actually invited to write a book for Hay House. And I hated the title. They wanted it to be called Navigating Your Midlife Crisis with Numerology. And I said, but I don't see it as a crisis.
No.
I see it as a major opportunity.
Yeah.
And what about the one you have in your 20s? But it didn't suit their demographic.
Okay. And it wasn't a stop me and buy one title. They wanted the stop me and buy one title.
Well, they wanted that title and they wanted it to be aimed at women of 40 to 60 because that's who buy Hay House books.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't do it with them.
No. And a lot of people will presumably, I'm thinking, put the midlife crisis in the same bracket as menopause.
Yes.
And the two are
nonsense.
Very different.
Very different.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with it whatsoever.
No. A lot of women reinvent themselves post-menopause, though, don't
yes.
they? Yeah.
Well, that's because you're in your last act of your life.
Okay.
That
okay.
is the last inverted commas crisis.
Right.
Which is your saging.
Right.
That's when you become a wise person.
Yeah.
And you've learnt stuff and you no longer care. And that's when, in terms of numerology, which we'll come to, that's when you work on your year number, which is your end of term project.
Okay. Interesting.
And that's when you work to make something better for the benefit of mankind.
Right. Yeah. It's like kind of going up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
and you reach the top, and it's all about that big vision stuff. Mm. Okay, so anyway, back to your errant husband.
Yes,
so at the age of 42, went off the rails.
Early 1990s.
Right.
That was the early 1990s, and I made myself unwittingly homeless, voluntarily homeless, by walking out and taking the two daughters with me.
Right.
But I had to, because he and the floozy planned for me to move into a bedsit somewhere, and the two of them were going to make me pay maintenance for them to have my children. What? Bonkers. Okay. Totally bonkers. So I took the children, did a runner.
But isn't it normally the woman who keeps the children that keeps the house?
Sadly,
isn't that how it goes?
My husband was a very prominent Freemason. I'm not saying any more.
Let's not go there.
I'm not going to.
No. Okay, moving on. So after that, yes. Yeah, no conspiracy theories at all in this interview. Yeah, my dad was one of those. Okay, moving swiftly on. So what happened then?
I couldn't get a job. And then a girlfriend of mine rang up and said, have you got a job? So I said, no, and I'm having problems because I'm still on crutches. I've been off work now for 14 months and they're going to operate on me again because I had a knee replacement and it didn't track. I actually dislocated it, but no one said that out loud. So 14 months after my first knee replacement, I had to have a second knee replacement, and that's when everybody ditched me on the grounds of ill health because I was too expensive to keep replacing. I was deputy head, and not just an office deputy head. I was a full-time teaching deputy head.
Right.
So I was expensive to replace. They ditched me. I couldn't get a job. And this woman said to me, well, would you consider working in Lewis Prison? And I said, absolutely not. I said, I can't stand men anymore for a start. And secondly, are you bonkers? It's on a hill and it's all slopes and stairs and I'm on crutches having had radical knee surgery. No. And she said, do you know, Michelle, I've known you for 19 years. I never realised you were a coward. She put the phone down on me. So I picked the phone up and said, I'll be there Tuesday.
That was a very clever move on her
part. She was
part,
very
was
clever.
She obviously knew you really well.
She did indeed.
And what was going to press your buttons.
She did indeed.
Clever woman.
So I went and sat outside Lewis Prison on the Monday to see what was going in and what was coming out, to see if I could match the dress in some way so I'd fit in. And it wasn't helpful because all that goes in and out of Lewis Prison is black and white uniforms and young women with micro skirts and lots of tattoos. So I went in dressed as a deputy head teacher, really. And I hated every minute of it, Katie. Mm. It was absolutely vile. I absolutely hated it. I went in on my crutches. They took my crutches off me and stripped them down to see if I was carrying drugs into the prison.
Gosh.
They then sent for a man to come and fetch me, a prison officer. And at the time, the prison I was working in was having toilets installed.
Oh.
Up until then, it was a bucket.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm, open buckets. Wow. So they were having toilets installed in the prison. And so they took me round the perimeter. And there were men hanging out of the windows, shouting at me, go on, you cripple, fall over, and chucking the contents of the bucket at me through the windows trying to hit me.
Good grief.
It was ghastly.
It was ghastly.
I went into the education department. I was asked to hear a man read. Well, crumbs, I'm a primary school trained teacher. That wasn't exactly rocket science. He was Asian. What was interesting was the book. It was all about a girl called Annie who'd got pregnant by a mechanic called Mick and was looking for a bedsit above boots, which may have had a lot to do with young men of a certain age who were in prison, but not a great deal to do with an Asian. Because he was an immigrant, actually, and he was sent there from Gatwick. He was an illegal immigrant.
Good grief.
And in the afternoon, I was meant to be working in segregation, which meant working with the men that are virtually untouchables because they've committed the kind of crimes that mean they need to be segregated from the rest of the prison. And I hated it, loathed it, and went home thinking, thank God I never have to do that again. But I couldn't get a job.
Hmm.
So when they rang me again about a week later and said, we've got an idea. If you run the art room for us for 3 days, we'll give you references that can get you a job in a polytechnic teaching adults. No one cares about crutches there.
Right.
I said, OK, I'll do it.
Wow.
And initially I went in for 3 days. There was a riot while I was in, which changed everything.
Mm.
And I stayed for 9 years.
Gosh. I'm amazing. I have been to a prison in a previous incarnation. To a women's prison, and was given a tour of the women's prison, and it was so depressing. I mean, just getting through the door of, you know, the double securities and walking around and talking to them. And what broke my heart, which you wouldn't have got a list, but what broke my heart was the creche. And seeing babies that had just been born. I thought, my God, you know, is this the way to start your life, your experience on this planet?
Absolutely.
In these walls. And then we were told they had, the babies were taken out in prams and pushchairs and what have you on the streets of London to acclimatise themselves to actually what every other baby is used to.
Yes.
It's quite a sobering experience going to a prison, isn't it?
It is. And it's also a country is judged by the state of its prison service. Look at us now.
Yeah.
Very had problems serious with Lewis indeed.
Last week, didn't they?
Yes. Well, that's not going to stop.
Yeah.
And it was when I was in Lewis that I started tracking suicides.
Right.
Because I couldn't deal with the suicides.
Right.
I didn't like the way the Home Office treated them. I hated the way the prison officers and other people treated them. A lot of it was down to bullying. The men were actually bullied into committing suicide.
By other inmates. Right. Right. Really.
And it was totally unacceptable to me. So I started logging when the suicides happened. And I started talking about it in public.
Right.
Such as at the National Physics Laboratories, places like that, and places where lighting was a subject of interest to lighting designers. So I started making these observations. And first of all, I got poison pen letters from Philips telling me to mind my own business. And then I got asked to sign the Official Secrets Act by the government. And I thought, OK, I'm onto something.
Yes, absolutely.
And they kept saying to me, you are a teacher. Mind your own business. You're not a scientist. At which point, a remarkable scientist called Dr. Alexander Wunsch stood next to me and said, no, she's not, but I am. And so Alexandra and I did quite a few double acts in various universities.
How did that come about that you were
there? He heard about me through the International Colour Association.
How interesting.
And Alexander would then stand beside me and I would make a statement about what I observed in prison.
Right.
And Alexander would say, and that is because fantastic. I was making the link between SAD syndrome,
right,
SAD, seasonal affective disorder, and prisons where men are not allowed to go out and they're under fluorescent lighting 24 hours a day.
Right.
Excuse me. And I was asked to sign the Official Secrets Act 3 times.
And did you?
No, I kept losing the paperwork, which was tragic, really, because it meant I couldn't return it. And then eventually a man arrived
in
a Black Rover and said, Mrs. Wynne-Jones, would you sign this, please, or hand in your keys? And I said, I'm going to hand in my keys. I'd done 9 years by then. But also I was no longer safe in prison. Stuff was going on in the prison, which meant I was no longer safe.
In what way?
Up until then, I'd never been frightened. And I met some really vile people that I'm not allowed to mention their names, but they were high profile prisoners, because Lewis is not a pussycat prison, it's an A category prison. And nasty things were happening, and there was a particular prisoner who was committing crimes to come back into prison to be with me because he said we had a special relationship. And I was then in a dangerous situation.
Absolutely.
And there were other situations that led me into colour and doing colour therapy when a particular prisoner who should never have been left alone in a room with a woman was left alone in a room with me. And on that day I was tired, so I was wearing a bright red pullover with black slash marks on it. That's what it looked like. Big blue circles and yellow zigzags. Yeah, fired me up. But it triggered him. And he put his hands around my throat and he was planning on killing me at that point.
Wow.
And he got me into the whole colour therapy.
How my life. If you were left on your own, how were you saved?
Because I don't believe in God. And a voice outside my body said, sit down and thank him.
Okay.
And I sat down on a little stool that was behind my heels. I was in the art room at the time with lots of other men, but they were all busy. They didn't see it. He had pushed me between 2 filing cabinets. So they could not see me. They could see his back. And I had my back against the wall with this little stool behind me. And a voice outside my body said, sit down and thank him and say to him, thank you for caring enough about me. This happened really fast. Caring enough about me to point out I've done something that's really upset you. I thought, sit down where? And I saw this little stool and I sat down and this man let go of my throat because I was now lower than him. And he had such a big ego, He stepped back because he wanted the other men in the room to see what he had done to that woman, that he'd made me into some kind of cowed creature sitting shivering on this little stool. And as he turned around, I was up, out and straight through the door.
And did you say that to him?
Thank you. I did. Yeah, I did.
And it worked?
Yes, it worked. That's when he stood back to let the other men see what he'd done to me. And then I was up and out of the room so fast, like a rat up a drainpipe, locked the door behind me, because I was on my own in the art room with 27 men in this character. And I went home. I didn't tell the prison what happened. I didn't tell anybody what happened. And then I thought, I can't go back in. How do I go back in? And a friend of mine, who's a bit strange, rang me up and said, what happened in prison today? And I said, nothing. So he said, I'm going to repeat the question. What happened? So I said, oh, it was horrible. And I told him what happened. And he said, you've got two choices. You ring the prison and tell them, or I will. And I said, no, I will have to do that. So I rang head of security and said I had an incident. And I told him what happened. And he said, don't come back for a week. We'll investigate. And the man concerned was sent back to Broadmoor, which is where he'd come from. But before he went, I asked to see him. And he said, you're a dangerous and stupid woman. You talk about colour all over this prison. You've got no idea what it means. And that's what got me into colour therapy.
Up until then, wow.
I'd already worked for several years as a colour and image consultant. And I was advising men in prison about how to approach landladies and what to wear and to cover up the tattoos and to grow their hair and look them in the eye and the whole body language and how to dress. But I hadn't got involved in the water of colour therapy because I didn't want to. But this particular very dangerous inmate, as he left, told me that because of his psychosis and his mental problems, he was the only prisoner in the state system, I don't know if this is true, to be allowed to determine the colour of his own cell. And he always had it pale blue because it calmed him.
How interesting. Wow.
And he got me into the whole world of colour therapy.
Fascinating. Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I learned a lot in prison. In fact, strangely, I learned everything I needed to learn for the rest of my life. Now, the suicides were really fascinating because I was trying to find a way whereby, under general studies and chatting to the men, that I could persuade them they had some kind of function in the world and that their function wasn't necessarily being a lifelong criminal or committing suicide. Right. I couldn't hack suicides, Katie, because I'd sometimes be teaching the man in the morning and he'd killed himself by 4:30. And I think, how did I not see that? How did I not know that? And sometimes it was men that I really got on well with. I had a relationship with them. Teacher-student relationship, I hasten to add.
Yeah.
But yeah. I liked those men. And they killed themselves. So I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And at about the same time, I was being stalked by a number. Now, you said at the beginning of this that I'm dyscalculate. It's true. I am a highly educated and intelligent woman, and I have white-knuckle fear around numbers, which I personally believe is past life. I came onto the planet frightened of numbers, and I can't see the patterns in them. And if you were to give me your telephone number now, I would have to close my eyes as I write it, because if I see myself writing it, I will lose it. I won't be able to write them down in the right order. They'll be completely jumbled. They won't be right. So I have to close my eyes to write your numbers down, then I'm fine. As long as I don't look at them. Because once I've looked at them, I've lost them. They've all got muddled up.
So, but then how would you then be able to pick up the phone and repeat that by looking at, you know, or your mobile phone?
I can do it once I've done it, when I can see it. Mobile phone? It took me 11 years to learn phone numbers.
Numbers rule our lives in so many ways.
They sure as hell don't rule mine because I can't do it. I can't do it. Even as I was approaching your flats today, my brain was saying, is it 31 or 13? I'll try 13. If I see 13 first, I'll try 13 and then ask. Because I get them back to front.
And how do you cope going to a supermarket and looking at prices and stuff?
That's not a problem at all.
Oh, okay.
No, but PIN numbers are.
Well, they must be.
They are. My bank actually said to me, bless his little cotton socks, my bank manager. He said, okay, numerologist, give me the numbers for the word gold. I said, well, that's simple. It's 7634. He said, end of subject. I said, what do you mean? He said, think of a word. That is not the word I hasten to add for my PIN number. But he said, think of a word, a four-letter word, and put the numbers to it. That's your PIN number, because you can remember the word, can't you? I said, oh, yes, obviously. He said, exactly.
So clever
thank
man.
God for him.
But then, but when you're faced with the keypad, does your mind go?
No, I'm fine.
You're fine.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Basic numbers, I'm fine.
Okay.
It's streams of numbers I can't hack, and I can't do things like adding up streams of numbers. So when I do numerology on stage in front of an audience, which I do a lot, I'm invited to do that a lot. My first comment, which makes everybody laugh, is there an accountant or a bank manager in the house? Because when I'm doing this, I'm going to get tired as I'm working, and then the numbers will be inaccurate. I won't be able to add them up right. And quite often when I'm doing numerology for people, because I don't use a computer, I do it on a sheet of paper in front of them, I say to the person, can you just check my maths? And they say, well, it's fine. I think, oh, good. And sometimes they say, no, the maths is wrong. And sometimes that doesn't matter.
Oh, wow.
Because it's the numbers I got which are about the person sometimes. And it doesn't actually... I say to them, was the information I gave you accurate? And they said, yes, 100%. I said, then don't worry about the numbers. Because the numbers are my way in. Because I get information, Katie, that isn't even in the numbers.
Right, right.
Isn't even there.
So it kind of opens the door.
It opens the door.
And it's a way for the person in front of you... Yeah. It's like, you know, a lot of people who use tarot cards say, actually, I don't need the cards, I know, but the client needs to have something tangible.
It's exactly the same. And because I was working in a men's remand prison, where every single person in that prison, including five governors, are all numbered.
Yes, of course, of course.
It was all about the numbers. And I only noticed because I noticed I was being stalked by a number. And I don't do numbers, so that became interesting. And it wasn't a sexy one like 1111. It was number 16. Number 16. Whoever has been stalked by number 16? I have never, in all the years I've been doing this, had a client ring me up and say, Michelle, what does 16 mean? I'm being stalked by it. But I was.
In what, you kept seeing it?
I kept seeing it everywhere. I'd be driving along from Eastbourne to Brighton and I'd be following bus number 16. There isn't a bus number 16, Katie, it's number 12. Buses to Brighton are number 12, and this bus would have number 16 on it, or I'd be parked in a traffic jam, and cars on all sides of me, their number plates were 16, or I'd be pulled up at traffic lights, and I'd look sideways, and, oh, I'm outside house number 16. And then I thought something's going on. So I started logging it in a notebook, and once I'd filled a notebook, I thought, OK, I'm not orchestrating this. This is happening to me,
yeah.
So it must mean something. So I went on Google. Does number 16 mean something? I ended up on a tarot website that said number 16 was worse than getting the death card.
Oh, God.
Because it's the crashing tower. It's where you lose everything.
Oh, my Lord. Was this before the husband went off?
No, this was after.
Oh, heavens to Betsy.
And I thought, how fascinating. Because not only does that describe my life, where I lost everything and had to start again from scratch, but that's what prison means. Everybody in prison, with the exception possibly of the governors, have had to start again. Even most of the prison officers are ex-military. This is their retirement post, being a prison officer. So I thought, this is fascinating because it means that number 16 is all about you've lost everything. Well, that's prison. And then, and only then, I began to notice other coincidences. Not a lot of people know, but mostly around the world, people are dehumanised by turning them into a number. You only have to think of that cult movie, The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm,
I am not a number. Mm-hmm. I will not be defined.
Yeah,
number six.
Yeah.
Interesting number in its own right. Well, I started to notice that prisoners who'd committed very violent crimes like murder, rape, assault, armed robbery, had lots of number eight in their prison serial number. Men who'd talked old ladies out of their pension or persuaded children to get in the car and confidence tricksters had lots of number three. I thought, how brilliant of the Home Office.
And is it random or is it a way to recognise them?
Well, I thought it was a way to recognise them.
Right.
So I rang the Home Office and said, I'm working in this prison. I often put my foot in it. Could you send me the list? And they said, it's computer generated.
Okay, Nina, Nina.
And I thought, you might think so.
Wow.
But governor number one is the head honcho governor. Governor number four deals with the prison estates. In other words, painting and decorating and the electrics. Prisoner number five is to do with education. I went back on the internet. And that's where I found a numerology website that said number four is to do with practical things like plumbing and decorating.
And eight is?
Eight is all about money, power, wealth, status and control.
And
now,
three?
If you think about control,
yeah.
Control is armed robbery and rapists. Number three is the actor.
Okay.
Confidence trickster.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one who can talk. The con man. Black. Yeah. And so I started actively looking at the men's...
This was presumably random.
Yeah. Totally random.
Oh my God. It's just mind-blowing,
it was mind-blowing. It blew my mind.
Good grief.
And I'm really interested in weird stuff. So it blew my mind, literally. And so for 8 years, I studied everything I could possibly find on numerology. And because I'm no good at numbers... it didn't matter whether it was Persian, Egyptian, Sri Lankan, Chinese, because they're all different. I studied all of them. So if I got a guy sitting in front of me who was Jewish, I could use the Chaldean system, which is Jewish. If I got a man who was Muslim, I didn't even ask him for a Western date of birth. I said, I'm not interested in your Western date of birth. Why would I be? You're a Muslim. Tell me a Muslim date of birth. Because this year, it's something like 1439, not 2016.
Okay.
Explains a lot.
Yeah, it does. Is there, what do you feel about these allegedly random selection of numbers for prisoners that has, it contains numbers describing why they're in there, that is reinforcing the energy behind that and not allowing them to move out of that energy, to move out of that space and be somebody else? Should they then be reallocated a completely different number that has a positive energy, which will help in their rehabilitation?
I think that is a fascinating concept. It isn't something I have considered. I will absolutely not only consider it, but I will pursue it after this. What I did notice was the number of the cells that the men were put into. Because there was one cell in the prison that one of the men actually wrote an ode to, not in the best possible way, because men who went into that cell self-harmed.
Wow. So there's something about the energy of the number of the cell.
And I remember going to the prisons. Prisons have a lot of priests of various denominations in prisons.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the priesthood and asking them if they would come into this particular cell, which was in segregation, and would they please come in wearing the full kit, bell, book, candle, incense, anything else they possibly wanted to bring in to physically cleanse the cell. Right. But also for the men to see them cleansing the cell with all this ritual.
Yeah.
And they treated me as though I was some kind of nutter and a witch.
And did they do it?
No, they didn't. No. They didn't know what I was talking about. Yeah. So I took a candle and I did it myself and showed the men how to do it. But unfortunately, once I was out of the prison, that wasn't something I could keep doing.
No.
But that's where I cut my teeth. Because in prison, everybody is a captive audience and they were all numbers. So I originally started working just with their date of birth because I didn't go into all the other stuff and trying to explain to them what their skills bank was. Because one of my jobs as one of the only professionally qualified teachers in there, because a lot of people have got a City and Guilds number thing, which says they're qualified to teach adults. Really? The kind of adults who failed in education all their lives? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think prisons need to be like university, with specialist teachers of people, dare I say it, like me, who's a left brain rubbish, right brain fantastic. I think like them. I think like them, so I could get into their space. I don't think with my left brain. Otherwise, I'd be brilliant at maths.
Yeah. Good.
And I'm not. I'm not. So I started off by looking at the men's date of birth and suggesting to them that they had a skills bank they were not necessarily using in the most positive way. For example, Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela has got lots of nines and lots of eights. The eights, well, I've just said, eights in prison were the men who had abused power, wealth, status. They were men who were very much into control. They were men into abundance and money. So they tended to be armed robbers. Mm-hmm. They tended to be high-profile criminals. They tended to be professional criminals. Well, you see the same numbers in people actually in the government, high-ranking military, the police.
There's a fine line of what side of the law you're going to take that skill set, isn't it?
Precisely.
You know, you've got the skill set and you're going along a road and you can go down that fork or that fork. Which one are you going to go down?
I used to say to men who drove the getaway car, well, you can drive under pressure.
Become a racing driver.
I said, why aren't you a courier in London or a driving instructor? Or better still, why aren't you an ambulance driver? Why aren't you driving ambulances?
Because you've got,
you've got the
ability
skills.
To keep your nerve and negotiate.
They drive under
which
pressure.
Other people can't.
Yes.
Make.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, they're intuitives.
Yeah.
Because they are right brainers. They're not left brainers. Yeah. And that's where I discovered that they think in completely different ways to the way education wants them to think, which is why they're mavericks and why they're much safer kept locked up in prison.
or if it could be captured at a young age, and if education was changed.
Oh, that's my biggest thing. I want to change
and that,
education.
And that skill was captured and then directed in the right way.
The governments around the world would never allow that.
No. I do a lot of work around right, left and right brain and education, which we'll talk about after the interview. Otherwise, we're just going off on another tangent. We have to arrange an evening over a bottle of wine.
I think that's an extremely good idea. I think it will take two bottles of wine and a sleepover, actually, Katie.
Yeah, bring your pyjamas.
Bring your pyjamas. So that's what I did. And then what I started to do with the men in the art room is I started to assign the colours to the numbers. Because for me, because I couldn't deal with the numbers, they gave me the screaming abdabs and I got white knuckle fear and couldn't breathe properly. I started to think, but if the numbers were colours, which is where I feel really comfortable because I'm an artist, if the numbers were coloured, how would I colour them? And to me it was obvious because I'd done some colour therapy by then. So I thought, okay, the chakra system. So number one is red, number two is orange, number three. So I went through that way. Even though I am aware now from working all over the world that not every culture sees the chakra colours the same. In fact, in some countries, they're completely reversed.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah.
And also in Hebrew, all the numbers have colours assigned to them. And it's actually universal, but the colours are all different. So I just decided, OK, I'm going to stick with these colours. So I said to the men, we can make pieces of graffiti or pieces of abstract art that represent who you are. So I make little pictures called the colour of art, colour of numbers rather, or the art of numbers. And that's what I do. I do little jewelled little pictures that represent the colours, and the colours come from the date of birth.
Yeah, and they're beautiful. And it's just a date of birth. It's got nothing to do with somebody's name.
I only use the date of birth to do these because your name can be changed just like that.
It can.
Flick of a switch, you can change your name. You can call yourself Kate, Katie, Catherine.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get married, as a lot of women do, and some women stupidly do it three or four times, and they change their name every time, and they change their frequency every time.
That's interesting. So the name that you were born with isn't necessarily the energy that you're going to take all through your life.
No. But my personal belief is that before we're even born, we have a script writing meeting with all the people we're going to incarnate with, and they tend to be the same people for a long, long, long time, because otherwise the law of cause and effect doesn't work very well. Because if I've stabbed you through the heart and killed you, in another lifetime, I'm going to have to care for you who might turn out to be a paraplegic child of mine. So there's a kind of cause and effect, which is well documented in every religion.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make sense if I'm doing that for a complete random stranger. It does make sense if I'm doing it for somebody in my team to learn that lesson. So I believe we have a script writing meeting. I believe that during that script writing meeting, we decide what we need to do or what we could do in order to develop ourselves as a fully experiencing human being. Now, you mentioned to me earlier about doing some work in Africa. The problem I have with Africans is quite often their date of birth is not correctly logged. They know roughly when they were born.
Right.
They can sometimes tell me I was born in this month, which doesn't... It changes everything.
Yeah.
Because for me, the day you were born, and I don't mean Monday or Tuesday, but the number, doesn't tell me who you were in a past life, because I couldn't care less. I'm not a past life regressionist. What I am interested in is what skills bank and experiences has that baby brought with them already the moment it arrives on the planet and touches down? Because your date of birth is not an accident, and you are not born according to what your mother thinks. You're born on the day you need to arrive. In fact, the way I used to describe it was waiting at Gatwick Airport at the arrivals hall for somebody to fly in on a Dutch flight. So as all the people come through with their suitcases, you're scanning the suitcases to see which flights have arrived. So you're looking at all the flights coming in from Afghanistan or Italy because you're waiting for the Dutch ones, and eventually the Dutch one comes in, and you can see by the sticker on the luggage. It's the same thing. Your day number tells me where you've been, what you've been doing.
So how does that work if a pregnancy has been induced and a baby hasn't arrived?
It's not an accident. It's not an accident.
Okay.
I was asked by a well-known person who rang me up from London to say that she needed to have an elective caesarean. I have to say her gynaecologist was appalled that she was making this phone call. And she had a week's time frame because of her very busy schedule. And she said to me, which day do I have the operation? And I said, I'm not God. I'm not going to give you that information. You and the gynaecologist make a decision about when you're going to do this, And when the baby has arrived on the planet, I will tell you who's come. But I'm not making that decision, because the baby makes that decision. And it is that random. So if you're reduced, caesarean, your mother says you were late, doesn't matter what your mother says. You're born on the day you're meant to be born, because that's the skills bank you bring with you, and that informs your personality as well. It tells me who's here. It informs your personality. Then your month of birth, and I'm not an astrologer, I've got no idea whether you're a unicorn, leprechaun, or what you are. Your month of birth tells me what the main agenda is for this lifetime.
Right.
What the big issue is going to be all the way through. It colours your whole life. Your year of birth doesn't just belong to you. You share that with everybody in your year group, and the people who are 9 years ahead of you and 18 years ahead of you and 27 years ahead of you and 9 years behind you, 18 years
behind. Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's the end of term project.
Okay.
And you start working on that when you are in your late 40s, early 50s, when you no longer care about what the world thinks, and you begin to think, do you know what? This isn't okay. I need to work on this. And you start having an issue that you and everybody in your year group is going to try to improve for the benefit of the rest of the planet. Now, for example, when we had Tweedledee and Tweedledum running the government, Nick Clegg and David Cameron, we had the only government in the world that was seriously interested in same-sex marriage. The Jimmy Savile thing blew up in their faces.
Wow.
All the care home stuff blew up in their faces. Why? Because those two men were working a number six energy. A number six is mother, and it's pregnant, and it's caring, and it's about loving relationships.
So how was that a number six energy?
Because of the year they were born.
Ah.
Their decade was the 60s.
Okay.
So they were born. Interestingly, not interested at all in the economy. That was Vince Cable, because Vince Cable was considerably older than the rest of them. He was working number eight.
So what about Theresa May?
I haven't even looked.
I'm not even going to ask you about Donald Trump.
I'm not even going to look at Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, because I just haven't had a chance to look at any of them. I'm just waiting to see how that pans out.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for America, because I think they are foolish in the extreme and very immature. And to think of the millions and billions of people in America, and they could only come up with those two? That says a great deal about the American people and the state of America, in my opinion. But I haven't looked at it. I'm not going to at the moment.
It is fascinating.
Yes,
it's a fascinating time in our history.
We are in a very, very interesting.
Really
and quite precarious if we don't want history repeating itself. Because the problem with mankind is that we tend to live for just under 100 years. And history tends to repeat itself every 100 years. So we don't learn from our mistakes very well.
No, we don't, do we?
No. And the word history, his story, it's not true. It's the way it's been recorded, but it isn't truth.
Yeah. And it's somebody's interpretation.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because that also comes down to, because we were talking before the interview about kind of psychometric testing and personality, which is something that I do as well with left, right brain, top, bottom, you know, how you think. And what is really fascinating, is when I've done this work in companies, and I say, why? So because you have all parts of the thinking within you, it's just one of them is likely to be your dominant quarter. If you are relaying a message to somebody, they are going to filter that message depending on where they are on the grid, which means they may not be hearing the message that you think they're hearing.
Quite right.
And if they then have to pass that on to somebody else, they will only pass on the bits that they think were important.
Quite right.
And that person will continue to filter. So when it gets to the person who actually has to do the action, God only knows what's going to be happening.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't what you intended.
No.
So the importance of making sure you hit all four thinking styles when you're communicating a message. So you know what your key message is and deliver it four different ways.
And what I do in companies is very similar in that I look at the team dynamic. I look at the date of birth. I don't need any other information. I look at the date of birth to make sure they've covered all nine bases.
Wow.
So that they have got a spread. Because what human beings tend to do, as you know, is we tend to appoint people who are like us because we like them. We don't appoint the one person who's going to make a difference to the company because they ask awkward questions and they are awkward and difficult because we don't like them.
Yeah.
And yet that's the very person
you've got to have.
Who needs to be in that company.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the amount of companies I've been through, and we all got on really well, but we've plateaued. I said, because you all think the same.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly.
That's why you've plateaued. You've got to have somebody who's going to come along and shake it up, however absolutely uncomfortable right that is.
Yes. And if a company asks me who that person is, I only need dates of birth. I need no other information. And I can say, that person. That person is the maverick. That person is the change maker. That's who you need in your company.
Mm.
But I also warn them, that person has a short attention span and probably will create mayhem and then leave. Because they're not going to stay very long. They don't stay in one place.
No.
They're travellers. They move on.
Yeah.
And then they move on and then they move on.
Yeah.
But if you've got that information, it's useful.
Yeah.
But again, I never read people, Katie, without their consent, because I end up knowing that's why I haven't read Donald Trump. I've got to wait until he becomes president, if he does, or Hillary. Then I think they're fair game because they're then in the public arena. But I won't read people without their permission because I end up knowing more about them than their mother. So I don't read people without consent.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
It's an invasion of privacy. And there are certain numbers that I see in people's numerology that for me are karmic.
Right.
In other words, pieces of dirty washing from a past life that they've brought with them that actually need looking at, need addressing. And if I see those, and I have several of them in my own numerology, including I have the Tony Blair. Now, that number was never originally called the Tony Blair. I have named it the Tony Blair worldwide. So when I say to people in Australia or Hong Kong or Sweden, ooh, dear, I'm sorry to tell you, but you have a little number here called the Tony Blair. And they all say, oh, dear, abuse of power. I say, yeah.
Oh, right. Is that what it means?
Yes.
How interesting.
It's an abuse of power number. I have it in the same place as Tony Blair. He and I have it in a very interesting place, a very important place. So I am doubly careful that I do not abuse power that I may or may not be perceived to have.
Yeah.
Whereas poor old Tony, we're all still waiting for an apology.
What, he's trying to get back into politics?
Yes, he is. And that would be a very dangerous move.
Wow. Yeah, he's an interesting character. Really interesting character. And so is Cherie, yeah, who I like, having met her a few times. She's a decent woman.
Well, she believes in restorative justice. She wrote something really interesting that made me go to Grendon Prison to see what they were doing there with restorative justice, which I agree with.
Mm. Yeah, fascinating.
So, going back to the numbers briefly.
Yes.
When you add the day, the month and the year together,
yeah,
I then get the last number that tells me why you're back.
Oh, okay.
And that's why, and I say to people, okay, right, let me tell you what your potential is if that's what you want to do. But as you said earlier, there's a very fine line between which side of the number you go. And that's exactly right. We come in with a certain set of numbers. It's up to us what we do with them.
Mm.
So we could use the number in its most negative or shadow side possible. So, for example, number 8, you could be an absolute pillar of society, making wonderful laws for people, making sure that everyone is safe because you're in the military and you're guarding everyone and looking after everyone, i.e. police, military, judges. You can be usually highly skilled at finance, anything to do with banking. You're going to be really good at all of that. Or you could be a master criminal. You could be a rapist. You could be a murderer. You could be somebody that actually uses that number 8 power in the most negative possible way. If you look at number 8 on its side, it's the symbol of infinity.
Mm.
It's also the one character that the Chinese absolutely adore because it represents abundance.
Mm.
Well, that's what number 8 does represent, abundance. But it's got two parts to number 8. So if you stand it upright, it's got a big head and then it's got a similar base. If the big head gets too big, and there's no balance between material and spiritual prosperity and abundance, it falls. It topples over.
Right.
Its own big head knocks it down, so it loses everything more than once in a lifetime. So you'll see people with 8 energy who are the great and the powerful, and also the more likely they are to crash and burn and end up in prison. Or like Philip Green, thank you. Total abuse of his power. Total abuse of money, total abuse of his power, and needs to be brought to book.
It's interesting because there's a phrase, it takes one to know one. So, you know, the police and criminals, it takes one to know one. That's why.
That's exactly why in the past, until very recently, prison officers were always recruited from similar backgrounds to the prisoners.
Because they recognise them.
They recognise them. They know how to deal with them. Yeah.
Mm. Fascinating.
Yes.
Wow. So where are you taking this, or are you not taking it anywhere? I mean, where do you want to expand it? Is there anything else any other skill or information that you want to acquire, or have you now reached it and you're now just taking it out into the world?
I've never stopped. I've been doing numerology for individuals. I started off working just with prisoners. And I started logging how prisoners learn, because if they can't read and write, how do they function? And some of them are highly successful men. Their children go to private school. They've got a yacht off the Grenadines. They live in Virginia Water. Highly successful men, and they can't read and they can't write. So how do they function? Right brain. They function intuitively. They function with their gut. And I suddenly realised, so do I. The difference with me is I did cope with left-brained education, except for the maths. But I did cope with left-brained education surprisingly well, but it's in my numbers that I would do. And I started logging how they did it. And when I realised that it was purely intuitive, and I thought, well, that's how I work, I realised for the first time that I am an intuitive.
Okay.
So what I get in the numbers isn't always there. And I'm reading the colours as much as I'm reading the numbers. And then stuff drops into my mouth. I don't even know what I'm talking about. One client, I said to her, well, of course, it's all about phytochemistry, isn't it? That's what you really should be doing. She said, what is phytochemistry? I said, I absolutely have no idea whatsoever. I don't even know how to spell it. And I didn't know. And this woman was a creative, had a creative job. And I said, phytochemistry. Well, we just parked it because I didn't know what it meant. Subsequently, it turned out that phytochemistry is plant medicine, and 2 years later, this woman has launched her own brand of wild medicines.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
But it dropped into my head.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came from, and I no longer care. I did care, so I took myself off to Arthur Findlay College,
which is the
psychic university place, to see where I was getting this weird stuff from. And also, I have experiences, particularly when I'm speaking in public, where the tone and pitch of my voice becomes a bit scary and I start saying we.
Who the hell is we?
We honour this woman for having hundreds of miscarriages or whatever. Hang on, who's we? Where's this language coming from? And where's the tone and pitch of my voice coming from? And why has the room gone freezing cold? So I went to Arthur Findlay College, which is a psychic college up in the north of England, international, to find out what was going on. And basically they told me that I am a natural medium. The difference is, Katie, I have no intention or wish or desire to talk to dearly departeds. That is absolutely not going to happen. But I did need to know that what I was getting was clean, because I have the Tony Blair number, the abuse of power and status. I've had to know it, what I was saying was clean. And that it's not my ego speaking. That it's not me. And that what I'm saying needs to be heard by somebody and is important. And it's nothing to do with dead people. Nothing at all. But I'm working mediumistically and I now accept that. So that's expanding, because I've accepted that I'm probably a spooky. And as you said earlier, my biggest drive now is I want an international debate about the way education is going.
It needs
And they can't dismiss me as a crank, because I've taught prison officers, I've taught prisoners, I've taught bank managers and bank robbers. I was deputy head of an infant school. I've taught four-year-olds right up to 104 in care homes.
Wow.
So they can't dismiss me as a crank, because I'm not a crank. And I think we are doing such a disservice to people by insisting that we do not deal with the arts and music and creativity and all the stuff that the right brain is so gifted at managing. Because you're sitting on a chair, you're wearing clothes, you drive a car. They were all designed by somebody.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't a left brainer.
I know.
And that's the drawback and that's the problem. And we are relegating half, if not more than half, of our population to prison.
I know.
Because they are the right brainers. They can't work. They can't cope.
Yeah, can't cope.
Can't work. Cope with that system.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
We have so much more to talk about. I think I might have to have another interview, because we've come to the end of this one. Thank you, Misha. It's been completely fascinating. We'll carry on. Sorry, listeners, but we're gonna carry on over a bottle of wine, and we may or may not record it. So thank you, Michelle, so much. It's been brilliant.
It's been a great pleasure, Katie.
It's been great fun.
Thank you for asking me.
So this has been Katie Day with Creating Ripples. Make sure you tune in next week. Thanks for listening.